Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Kelly Kirk. Kelly Kirk is a pro bodybuilder. He's an educator, and he's the founder of the Sophia Graham Foundation. And he has quite an interesting journey of loss and of just transcending loss and doing some really impactful things to help others with both their mental and physical health. Kelly, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been excited for a while now to have you on the program. I'm glad we finally got this together.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dave. I'm looking forward to this.
We met through a podcast guest forum that we're both members of. I get weekly newsletters from them suggesting potential podcast guests. And I took a look at your background, and it certainly aligns with the mission of my podcast, and with the mantra being, we're all students and teachers, so let's learn from each other. I thought your story, your journey would be a really great example and inspirational for my audience, who typically is looking for ways and strategies to transcend trauma. So that's what got us to this point today, and I'm anxious to get going, and I have a bunch of questions for you.
Sounds good. Let's go.
My first question is, tell our audience about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions today.
Okay. In a nutshell, I'm 56. I had a pretty easy 40 years. I had a great childhood. I'm the youngest of five. Family was great. I wrestled, played baseball in high school, captain of the wrestling team, senior class president, great jobs. Life seemed like it was how it was supposed to be and always pretty easy. When I was in my 40s, my two best friends and I decided we were going to open up a gym. We thought this was going to be the end all be all and have 10 gyms and be successful. This was in the 2007, 8, 9, around that area. And it was tough. The economy was tough. It just wasn't going as well. We didn't have the business experience that we really needed at that point. And we were struggling. And in the middle of all of that struggling, my brother had gotten a divorce from his wife, and his kids, Brittany and Connor, were 11 and 12 years old. His wife had remarried. And I get a call from my dad, and the kid's stepdad had murdered them, had shot both of the kids in their head. And obviously that was something that nobody's ever prepared for, you know, two kids getting murdered and something that should never happen. But me having been through most of my life and never having, you know, I had a grandmother pass away. I mean, that was pretty much it. I never had anything bad. Everything had always gone good. It was really the first time in my life that I had to deal with something that was really tough to swallow and process. About 3 months after the kids were murdered, and one of the things about that is it was so much coming together from the community and the people around the gym. It blew me away about how much people stepped up and wanted to be part of it and really try and support me. A couple months after that, my mom passed away. 30 days after my mom passed away, my dad was diagnosed with a stage 4 glioblastoma, a brain tumor, and he made it about 13 months before he passed away. And not long after that, my two best friends and I really had a falling out on how the business was supposed to be run. And I walked away from the gym, and they lost it. They lost the business about a year ago, and corporate came back, and I purchased the gym and paid for the loan and all that and took the gym back over. So I had lost my two best friends, you know, kind of in the middle of all that. I get the gym back, but it was just too far gone. There was a bad lease. It was bad business. It had a bad reputation. And I just had a really hard time trying to get it to build back up. I lost the gym, I guess, in 2000, 17 is when it would be, somewhere around in there. But before that, Sophia, little firecracker ball of energy, had walked into the gym a few months before we closed and wanted to meet me and wanted to join the gym, and she did. There was a huge age difference, and her and I started hanging out and dating, and we just hit it off. It was perfect. And I really thought at that point, I'm like, the reason I went through all of this trauma and tragedy was because somebody was preparing me to realize how good this was and why it was put in front of me, you know. And she was just amazing. I lost the gym. I lost my place to live. I literally lost everything. And I ended up living at a rest stop in Virginia in my car for about 3 months. I had a smart car. So it wasn't like I was in a minivan. I was in a pretty small car. And the entire ordeal, she just believed in me, supported me, pushed me to do better. And there were days where I was done. You know, I had, there's no way forward. What am I going to do? I don't have any faith in God. I don't have any faith in family and friends and anything. I was just done. And she just believed in me. You can do this. Go get a job. What do you want to do? Blah, blah. You know, just, it was amazing. And a lot of that, you know, in the moment, you don't realize it. It takes some retrospect to kind of go back and see that. A friend of mine who I had worked with in a previous lifetime at Gold's Corporate contacted me, and he asked if I had been working out. I said, no, I was about 220 some pounds, and I'm 5'5". So that was pretty heavy. I was out of shape, high blood pressure, just not feeling good. And he said, well, why don't I give you and Sophia complimentary memberships? And I said, I would love that. You don't have to. And he goes, no, he said, it's the right thing to do. But the only way I'm going to do it is if you promise me you get your tail up and you come to the gym, you know, don't let me give you this and have it not be used. And I said, okay. So the next morning, Sophia and I got up and we started going to the gym. Now, she had come into my gym originally because she wanted to compete in women's figure and physique. And I had some experience training people on that and working through that. So she was thrilled to get back in the gym, and I was too. We started going twice a day, and fast forward 6 months later, my physical started getting better. I started losing a little bit of weight and feeling a little better about myself. And I'll be darned, as my physical got better, so did my mental. And that just kind of changed everything. I ended up getting a job, and that substituting high school temporary job turned into a permanent job. They offered me a job as a nutrition and wellness teacher. Never in a million years thought I would be a teacher. And she was just so proud of me, you know, for being able to do that. Anyway, we kind of worked our way back. She was a pediatric dental hygienist. So she worked on little kids' teeth. And her and I started a YouTube channel. We started teaching people how to do healthy keto and intermittent fasting, a lot of nutrition stuff, just because it was really shaping who we were. She was competing, getting her IFBB Pro card. I was really just trying to support her and learn how to teach, and she was still supporting me, but it really felt like we were building a little empire, for lack of a better word. And she comes out one day and tells me 4 years ago, and she says, I think you need to compete again. I said, babe, I'm 50 years old. I don't think I want to get on stage again. It's been 19 years since I've competed. I said, I don't need some third place trophy somewhere, you know? And she goes, no, I think you could get your pro card and be a pro bodybuilder. I said, I don't think so. She's like, no, I do. And we had an event that afternoon. We saw some of the judges and people that, you know, are in the know. And she had them take a look at me, and they all agreed with her. Yeah, you should. You've got 9 weeks to get on the stage at Masters Nationals. You should do this. So fast forward 9 weeks later, we were in Orlando, and I took second place at Masters Nationals for the first time I'd been on stage in 19 years. And I was like, well, you were right. Who's wrong? I didn't get my pro card, but obviously I belong up here, and this was something that I wanted to do, you know. And it was just amazing. And fast forward 2 weeks later, and Sophia passed away in her sleep. And there was nothing wrong with her. She hadn't been sick. She was healthy as could be. And it was just, you know, one of those things. And for all the stuff that I had been through, losing my nephew and niece and my best friends and my mom and my dad and the business and my house, you know, I wasn't prepared for any of that. But losing your person is on a completely different level. You know, we cooked together, we ate together, we trained together, we laughed together. It was just very different. And I was not prepared for that and really wasn't sure how I was going to react. A few months later, I was having lunch with one of my good friends, and I was telling him I wanted to do something in her honor and start a business or something. And he's, you know, how about a t-shirt company or a supplement? He said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I want to do for other people what Sophia did for me. And he said, well, what was that? And I said, she believed in me when nobody else did. I didn't believe in myself, and she believed in me. And he very matter-of-factly says, well, there you go. And I'm like, there I go, what? What do you mean? And he said, there's your business. And I said, I don't understand. And he said, you start a business or a nonprofit where you believe in other people and you support them when they don't think they can. So I started 222 Muscle, the Sophia Graham Foundation, and we are a 501c3. We're the only 501c3 in the country that I know of that pushes mental health through physical strength. And what we do is we raise money to provide gym memberships, training, nutrition advice to anybody going through a trauma or tragedy where that advice or that gym membership might change and or save their lives. And that was 4 years ago. And since then, it's expanded. I got certified through John Maxwell Leadership Training. I just got my IFBB Pro Bodybuilding card a couple weeks ago. So it's really kind of grown. And now I go into businesses and schools and churches and sports groups, and I talk about leadership, but I talk about leadership through grief, through loss, through growth. Even with my kids at school, I talk about growth. And, you know, everybody has their own version of growth, but growth could be academic. It could be your relationship with your parents. It could be your relationship with God. It could be your biceps bigger. You know, there are so many different ways of growth. I thought I was done, you know, and now I look back at that and growth absolutely was possible. And I'm still grieving, for lack of a better word. I bawl my eyes out at some point every single day. And it's okay. It's just who I am. It's part of the process, but it's what built me. You know, the podcast yourself, and you talk about how we all are learning and we all are teaching. And I'm a teacher, and I certainly taught Sophia things and helped her with bodybuilding and all of that. But I sit here every day and I think about the fact that she changed my life and taught me stuff twice. Once when she walked into my life, and once when I lost her. And it's a journey that's really, to me, just getting started, and it's growing, and I'm not 100% sure where it'll take me, but that's kind of my story in a nutshell and where I'm at right now.
And that's quite a nutshell, Kelly. As I was listening to your story and listening to the number of losses that you experienced, you had so many tragic losses in such a short period of time. We're talking about your nephews being shot, taken at a young age, and that's a parent's worst nightmare, is to lose a child. Your parents. And then you talk about the symbolic losses, or the losses not related to death. We're talking, you know, loss of job, the loss of your business, the loss of your home, you living in your car. And then through what I saw as pure serendipity, Sophia walked into your life at the exact moment that you needed her. She lifted you up to become a better version of yourself. And mm-hmm. she helped you transcend your own losses and your own challenges through her influence, through her presence. And now, because of her physical absence, you are now learning to transcend your own loss and find meaning and help others as a result of her influence on you. And the Sophia Graham Foundation sounds like it's an extension of the essence of who Sophia is.
Yeah, you know, 100%. And it's funny, when I was putting the foundation together, I had a couple people that asked me, they said, well, you know, why are you putting her name on it? She's not somebody famous. And I said, that's not the point. I want everybody to know her. You know, I want them to know who she was, you know. And there's no, when I am happiest and I am most at peace is when I am here on stage in front of people and I am talking about her. and what she did to me and how she, it's just comforting, you know, to me. So in some way, there's a selfish aspect of it. It's my way of keeping her alive and, you know, me dealing with it. The flip side of it is I know just from experiences and conversations I've had with people, you never know when you're going to actually touch somebody, and you never know what something that you're going to say is going to make a difference to somebody. So I know I'm doing the right thing and kind of heading in the right direction. People think that grief breaks you, and it can't. But what I've learned over the last 4 years is that if you channel it, take it, accept it, instead of grief breaking you, grief will build you.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, kind of where I am. I accept it. I'm a very happy person. You know, if I didn't tell my story, I don't think anybody would know. I smile and I laugh and I joke and I have a good time with my students and all of this. But deep down inside, I'm grieving, and I probably always will be, you know, and I'm okay with that in some weird way.
Well, you know, this, for me, I'm no stranger to loss. I mean, I've danced with death since I've been 5 years old, and I've experienced every loss imaginable. And one of the things I've learned is that grief is a microcosm of life. We're not going to have happy days 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There's going to be times of challenge. There's going to be times where we're angry. There's going to be times that we're sad. There's going to be times that we're disappointed. But all of that has something to teach us. It makes us the genuine individuals who we are. And we have to make friends with all parts of ourselves if we're going to be able to be present for others. That's been my firm belief.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's selfish for you telling your story, because Sophia lives through you. You are working with her side by side to make a difference in the lives of individuals who were down on their luck, just like you were at one time.
Yeah.
You are trying to help individuals with mental health challenges. You're trying to pass on the lessons that Sophia taught you. And when we pass on those lessons that our deceased loved ones have taught us, they always are going to remain alive in the hearts of others. And as long as you're doing that, there's nothing. In fact, I believe it's not selfish, it's selfless.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. That makes me feel good. So I appreciate that.
Speaking of Sophia, I love my audience to get an idea. I know you've told us how you met, what her influence was on you as far as helping you basically arise like the phoenix from the ashes. But tell us more about who Sophia is. I'd love our listeners to know who she is and what you love so much about her.
Sophia is this firecracker ball of energy, is the best way for me to describe her. She was 4'10", almost 4'11". She was competing on stage, 114, 115 pounds of muscle and just energy. The things that blow me away now is it's been 2, 3, 4 years. And like I said, I work for the IFBB, NPC. I work bodybuilding shows all over the country. And people will come up to me that I don't know, and they'll say, hey, you know, I follow you in the foundation. I met Sophia 7 years ago at a show in Pittsburgh, and she was so nice to me. She talked about this and this and blah, blah, blah. What? Just, it boggles my mind. When I first lost her, I would go into places where her and I would go. I walked into a steakhouse here that she and I ate at all the time. And before I left the first night, I had a waiter and the manager coming over and sitting down and talking to me and talking about how they knew when I walked in that something tragic had happened. They could just tell, but that they always looked forward to having her come in here because she was so nice to everybody and just such a ball of energy. I got a message from a young kid about a year ago, and he sent me a message on social media, and he said, you know, Mr. Kirk, which that's how I knew he was a kid. We're still calling me Mr. Kirk. He said, I've been having a really hard time just going through some personal stuff and not wanting to get out of bed and even go to work and do the basic things that I have to do. He said, but I listened to one of your stories, and you talked about how Sophia was this little ball of fire, and at 4:30 every morning, the alarm would go off. And if she was in prep, her feet hit the floor and she didn't stop. And he said, I think about you and Miss Sophia all the time. And he goes, that's just what gets me out of bed some days. And I was blown away by that, because you know, the mornings that I laid here thinking, oh God, I don't want to get out of bed, and she's up and going and ready to go. Who would have thought that 5, 6, 7, 8 years later, that would have been making a difference in somebody else's life? So that's just, you know, who she was. Everybody loved her. She was just a huge ball of energy. And honestly, she's still a ball of energy, because I get so many signs and so many different things from her that I know her energy is still here. And that's, I think, because of how the energy that she was here on Earth is still the energy that she has, you know, that comes through, you know, all the time now. And that's the best thing I can say about her, is just, she was genuine, she was happy, and just, it was energy.
Well, and it sounds like she is still working her magic from
100%
from the dimension she is now residing in. And I truly believe, like you mentioned, signs. I'm a firm believer that our loved ones can connect with us through signs, and that we can transform the relationship with our loved ones by creating a bond with them, by responding to those signs and acknowledging those signs. Relationships don't die because the physical body does. They live on. It's our ability to understand that and make our deceased loved ones the best parts of who we are that helps us transform the relationship. It helps us integrate our grief and move forward in grief. It sounds like she's a very indomitable spirit.
I feel like that. I talk to her 24/7. I'm that crazy guy that's in the grocery store walking down the aisle. Looks like I'm having a conversation with myself, but I'm having a conversation with her. And the signs and stuff that I've gotten back, and the stories that I could tell, literally in class one day, this was 2 years ago, and I have a beach ball sitting on my windowsill. She had given me, been sitting there since I started teaching. And the kids and I were talking about her. I'm an open book. My students know everything about me and her and everything. And I'm talking about her, and I'm a little choked up, you know, and I got a little bit of tears in my eyes. And I don't remember what we were talking about, when I was telling some story. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, this beach ball rolls off the windowsill and straight across the room. Dead silence in that room. You could have heard a pin drop. And I had one of the kids go, "Mr. Kirk, was that a ghost?" And I said, "Well, an angel." One thing is, I have never in my life been extremely religious, but I've always been very spiritual. Yep. And I've never necessarily known what you believe, what you don't believe. I certainly go round and round with my faith now. I get angry at God. I'm mad at the world, you know? But at the same time, I still have a huge belief. So there's that kind of dichotomy. But what I know now that I didn't know 5 years ago is that no matter what you believe, this is not it. It's not it. There's more. And I would have said that 5 years ago, but I don't know that I necessarily would have felt it and believed it 100%. And now I don't question that at all. And it's 100% because of her.
It's amazing, because the biggest tragedies in our life can allow us to open up our perspectives to understand that there's magic in the universe beyond our understanding of science. Mm-hmm. That things can happen that are real to us and that we know are real, but don't have a rational explanation behind it. But it doesn't mean it's not real.
Right.
And I think the fact that you've been so open with keeping that relationship with Sophia going, and you've stated your intention, you're not going to die because you're physically not here. I'm keeping you alive, and we're going to continue that relationship. She's reciprocating. And I think it's two ways.
Yeah, I love that. That makes me feel good. Actually, I appreciate that. That's great.
Keep talking to her. Keep
I might be a little crazy.
Yeah, I think I've been accused of being a little crazy too, Kelly, but I still talk to my deceased ancestors, and they're very much a part of what I do. They inform everything that I do. And it's just great to be able to know that we can empower ourselves to still have that community of souls be a part of our physical life. So, and we just need to be able to understand that, you know, we can do that, and that we're capable of doing that, and that there's absolutely nothing taboo about it. So,
yeah.
But thank you for sharing about Sophia. She sounds wonderful. I've seen pictures of her on your website, and she's just got this kind of magnetism about her. It's like people are automatically drawn to her just because of the aura that she put out every day. And I am glad that serendipity brought you two together, because we wouldn't be talking right now.
Yeah. One of the things that I have that I'm so happy on. So we have an app. It's called Marco Polo, and it's a video voicemail. And I've probably got 500 messages back and forth from her, video messages, and it saves them. And when I first lost her, I went back and I was like, man, I have all these videos. I need to go through these. And I was so hopeful that there was going to be some message on there about, baby, I love you and you're the greatest thing ever and blah, 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 right? And there was one or two that were kind of sweet. But the ones that I find myself going back to and listening to now are the normal ones. Hey, I'm sitting in traffic. Just got out of work. Hope your day was good. I'll see you at the gym in a little while. Let's make pork chops when I, you know, when I get home for dinner. Like, just the normal everyday, day-to-day stuff. I'm very lucky that I have that. It's funny, the stuff that you go back to, because again, you know, I feel like I want to look for these big emotional things, but it's not. It's the little stuff that really makes the big difference. She was very much that way.
Yeah. And, you know, it's sometimes the little things more than the big things that we can hang on to. So, but thank you again for that. Thank you for letting our audience get to know Sophia through your eyes.
Absolutely.
Now let's get back to your work with nutrition and mm-hmm. you know, bodybuilding. From your experience, how does proper nutrition and the pursuit of physical strength improve an individual's mental health?
Well, from a physical standpoint, it's probably 75%. You know, you can go to the gym all day long. We always talk about you can't outrun a bad diet. You know, I can get somebody to lose weight. I tell the kids that school bus all the time, I can make you lose weight or gain weight eating nothing but Doritos. Are you going to feel good? Probably not. But it's still calories in, calories out, thermodynamics. You know, you can make that work. But from a mental standpoint, the science just keeps getting better and better. And the things that we knew or we thought we knew 20 years ago when I started training and working out, to 5 or 6 years ago when she and I first started doing keto, to now, to what we're going to know in 10 years, just absolutely boggle my mind. You know, when we first started talking about keto, Sophia and I, back in 2018, we did it because we had done low carb before. Low carb's horrible. You're tired, brain fog, headaches. So I said, let's do this keto thing that everybody's doing it and just prove them wrong. And we started doing it, and we're eating bacon and butter, and just, we didn't know what we were doing. We were following what, you know, people were doing on the internet. And about 2 weeks into it, we were ready to quit. And I was in a chat room or Reddit or somewhere, and I met a guy who was a scientist for National Institutes of Health. And he and I were talking, and he said, look, I don't know anything about bodybuilding. He said, but as a doctor, we use a VLCHF, very low carb, high fat diet, in the medical field all the time. We use it for kids with, not schizophrenia, I'm trying to think what they use it for, different types of cancer. He said there's all kinds of things, because your body, a lot of these different diseases and things need sugar and need carbohydrates and glycogen to live off of. And if you take it away, they die. So he and I met a few times, and I kind of brought the bodybuilding angle, and he brought the medical angle, and we sort of tweaked it, and Sophia and I tweaked it, and it just made a world of difference. Well, fast forward now 6 years later, the science is better. The people know better. You know, it's not this fad on the internet kind of thing. One of the big things I talk about now with the kids all the time is your microbiome in your gut. It used to be the only thing we knew about your microbiome was diarrhea or constipation, you know, that was kind of it. And now they're finding out that your microbiome might actually control everything from different types of cancer to schizophrenia to dementia. Who in the world would have ever thought that what you ate and what's in your gut was going to control dementia, you know, 20 years later? So I love the sciencey part of it. And I tell the kids all the time, I'm like, what Mr. Kirk is telling you today, 5 years from now, you guys are probably going to look back and go, he was close, but the science is better. Now we know this, you know, because it's just changing all the time. And it blows my mind. You know, if I go back 15 years ago as a personal trainer, we used to tell everybody, you have to eat 5, 6, 7 times a day, small meals, because it increases your metabolism and blah. All that's been proven false. You know, it doesn't matter. You can eat one time a day. I intermittent fast. I do a 24-hour fast once a week. I do 15 to 18 hours, 3 or 4 days, and then 2 days where I eat normal. About every 3 months, I'll do a 48 to 50-hour fast. And that's not from a bodybuilding standpoint. That's more from a health standpoint, for all that fasting does, you know, to your body and your brain and your growth hormone and your gut reset and your immune system and all of this stuff. So I love the science part of it. And it's funny because as a bodybuilder, I'm supposed to be focused on just the physical aspect of what do I look like, which I am. And I've made it work that way. But I also love the internal part, you know, how does it affect your mental? How does it affect your physical? And again, I tell the kids all the time, if you're living off of Doritos and soda, what's going on in your gut? What's going on in your brain? What's going on in your body? Than it is if you're, you know, eating something healthy and trying to get up and go to school and do the things that you have to do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the old saying is you are what you eat.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, it's like, you know, again, we were talking before we went on the air in terms of, you know, I mean, 4 years ago, I was 252 pounds. And I just looked at my wife and said, I can't do this. I said,
yeah.
So I found Noom and a nice cognitive behavioral therapy program that helped me reinvent my relationship with food. I wrote down everything, ate everything in balance. And now I really eat a lot of antioxidants, protein, healthy carbs. I like the Chobani yogurts, the berries. So I try to eat, you know, and when I decide I'm going to go off my diet and just eat what I want, I'll just take a meal, eat what I want, and then I go back into it. But I also couple that with aerobics 4 to 5 times a week and some light weight training, just consistency. And I feel better now, Kelly, at 70 than I ever felt at 35.
Yeah. And you know, it's neat that you say that, because you talk about, like, if there's, you know, you'll go off your diet. People ask me all the time, well, do you have cheat meals? And I said, no, that doesn't mean that I don't eat pizza. But if I know that this weekend is coming up and it's so-and-so's birthday and we're going to go out, I plan that into my week. I just know that, hey, Saturday, this is what I'm going to do. And Sunday, you know, I'll be back on. And you know, I agree with you. At 56, I feel better now than I did at 30, because at 30, I was working out, but I was eating like crap and going out and staying up late and drinking and doing stupid. Now, you know, I go to bed at night. Well, that's what I eat a lot better. But I love, like, the Noom and the stuff that you're talking about. I love the nootropics is another, you know, big thing in the last couple of years that didn't exist a few years ago. Nobody talked about the brain-gut connection. And that to me is just so interesting. Your serotonin levels and your theanine levels and your dopamine levels and how all of that relates to your diet, but also relates to how do you act today? How, you know, how tired are you? How smart are you? I mean, that's 10 years ago, nobody talked about that. And, you know, we're just, I feel like, scratching the surface. And it makes me wonder, where the heck are we going to be in 5 years or 10 years from now? You know, what are they going to know that we don't know now? So yeah, I love that. Love that, you know, kind of what you went through and the process to do that is just fantastic.
Yeah. I know you mentioned what we eat, and I know a good friend of mine, before he had trouble with his knees, he was into running and bodybuilding, mm-hmm. and we were talking, and he said, you know, you can do an hour and a half workout, but then if you go and eat pizza and wings and beer, you've just defeated the purpose of that workout.
Yeah.
And I mean, to me, it makes sense. And that's why when I focused on healthy lifestyle changes, I wanted to focus on my diet first, on what mm-hmm. I was eating first, and then gradually ramp that up with exercise. But I think the two in combination, I think that are really important. I think everything in combination is important.
Yeah. Yes.
Staying on the nutrition kick, I know you teach a a nutrition and wellness course to high school students, I would suspect that just from my limited contact with you, your students have a blast with you and you have a blast with them. So what makes your course unique or different from other high school nutrition or wellness courses? What do you do that takes it above?
So, I was at a conference and there were several other nutrition teachers from around the area. One of the teachers was talking about her class that day. And she goes, yeah, today we were teaching the kids how to julienne a carrot, how to cut up a carrot. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And she's like, how about you, Mr. Kirk? What were you guys talking about today? And I said, in my class, we were talking about conspiracy theories in the pharmaceutical industry. She looks at me and says, well, what does that have to do with nutrition? And I said, well, a lot. I said, today we were actually specifically talking about statin drugs and cholesterol and how statin drugs are prescribed. It's a $21 billion a year business. Mm-hmm. And doctors prescribe statin drugs ridiculously easily now and trying to lower your cholesterol. And there's so much science now telling you that cholesterol is not a bad thing. There is some bad cholesterol, but it's not a sweeping, gesture like they want to tell you it is. And they're very quick to put people on statin drugs. And there's a lot of issues with joints and guts and all kinds of stuff that statin drugs run. And I said, how about instead you learn how to control your cholesterol through your diet and exercise and lifestyle choices? And I said, so that's how it ties into my class. And she kind of looked at me and she says, well, is that in our curriculum, meaning through the state? And I said, well, it's in mine. So, that's kind of how I try and give the kids a lot of real world, a lot of real world stuff as opposed to just, what's in the textbook and kind of what we're supposed to teach. And a lot of that is just from personal experience, and going through it. I like to know what's going on with the kids. I've had several kids who have been anemic, and they're low on certain vitamins and different stuff going on, and they'll go to the doctor and they'll come back and they'll tell me, and I'll see they're changed their diet and eating, and we'll talk to them and we'll find out. I'm like, well, you're taking iron, but are you taking vitamin C? No. Well, you need to have increased vitamin C to be able to increase your iron absorption. Let's talk about that. Let me talk to your mom and send them some stuff. So I like to be in the middle of kind of nosy, for lack of a better word, and know what the kids are doing. I have athletes that come to me, kids that are coming to me wanting to know, yeah, how much protein should I eat? And I want to work out and wrestle and play baseball and football and that kind of thing. Girls and guys both that want to lose weight and feel better. You hear a lot about how unhealthy or lazy or whatever the kids are, but there's a lot of kids that are the exact opposite. They are far more in tune with diet and nutrition than I ever was or we ever were. It was a weird thing to go to the gym when I was in high school. And now, I don't know what the percentage would be, but I bet it's 20, 30, 40% of the kids probably work out at some point. I try and tap into all of that with my kids and make the classes a little bit more fun, a little bit more real world. We do some fun experiments. We do water taste tests to see if they can tell the difference between Dasani water. And, they're blown away when I tell them that when we were kids, there was no such thing as bottled water.
No.
What do you mean there was no bottled water? I said, they didn't have bottled water. We drank out of the damn hose in mom and dad's front yard.
Yeah.
So we go through experiments to kind of show them different stuff like that. I talk about one of the things that the kids love every year is the World Health Organization a few years ago has made insect protein something that they want to push because of climate change and sustainability and the, cost of it and all this kind of stuff. And the kids are like, insects? So I order edible insects every year from Amazon or whoever it is. And I bring them in and I get one of the other teachers to come in and we'll eat a few roaches and crickets and whatever else is in there. And some of the kids will get on it, but they love that. I have a buddy that works for the Army National Guard and he brings in MREs. And we talked about nutrition in the military and how do you, how are you at war and how do you feed yourself and take care of yourself and do what you need to do? But then we bring MREs in for the kids to try these, what we would think are, and they love that. They look forward to that every year. Mr. Kirk, are we doing the MREs? Are you bringing the Army food in? So I have a really good time teaching the class and just trying to relate to the kids and make it something fun. And I tell them all in the beginning of the year, I'm like, you guys will all talk about how, oh, Mr. Kirk's class is easy. You'll have fun in there. And I said, it'll be easy if you pay attention. But I said, when you guys leave, you're going to be surprised that I'm going to have snuck a little bit of knowledge in and you didn't even realize that you learned something. So that's kind of the way I try and go with it.
Well, you know, I think if you create a safe, a fun environment where kids are welcome, they're going to learn because of that. They're going to be motivated to learn the material, even if as much as it's just to meet your expectations, because you treated them with respect. You focus on building relationships with them. You take an interest in their lives. And that is the key, I think, to any good teacher. And boy, if I was in high school again, I'd probably have to look you up in Northern Virginia and see if I could get into your class.
Come on, we can use more.
Can I lie about my age?
Yeah, you and me both.
Perfect. We'll work out something. Kelly, one of my last questions for you this evening is, if you could leave our listeners with one takeaway, any takeaway that you want to leave us with about grief, about the importance of physical health, what would that be?
If you are going through something in your life, trauma, tragedy, will find something to grasp onto and push through it and build off of it. Everybody goes through different things in your life. And I've dealt with people now from everything from drug addiction to getting out of prison to losing a loved one to divorce to cancer to losing a dog. You know, everybody has a different level of what they go through. And we've all felt like, if you haven't, you're a lucky one. But most of us have felt like, how am I going to go on? How do I take another step? How do I do another day? And you always hear people say, oh, you know, day by day or minute by minute. That doesn't really do much when you're that person, you know, in there. So you've got to find something to grab onto and to work towards. For me, the night that I lost Sophia, one of our last text messages was her texting back and forth to me. And this was 2 weeks after I had taken second in a bodybuilding show. And I said, babe, I talked to some of the judges and they think that I could really win this thing. And her text to me back was, baby, I love you. I support you. Now go out there and win the whole effing thing. And I wrote back to her and I said, baby, I will. I love you. I promise. And that was my last text message to her. So when all of this happened, the next morning, I'm walking around my house just going, you know, what do I do? What do I do? And it clicked. I grabbed onto that. That's what I told her. That's what I promised. And I grabbed onto it. And it's been 4 years. It took me 4 years to get to that pro card and to hold that promise. That's what got me out of bed every day. That's what got me, kept me moving. That's what made the foundation. That's what did everything to me. You have to find something, no matter what it is, no matter how small you think it is, find something, grab onto it, and push through it.
Yeah. That is sage advice, Kelly. Thank you. My last question for you this evening is, if people want to get in touch with you, find out more about the Sophia Graham Foundation, contribute, help, volunteer, what's the best way for them to do that?
Absolutely. Several ways. Muscle.com, SophiaGrahamFoundation.org. Those are both the same websites. They're connected to each other. You can go on there. If there's somebody that you know that needs our help, that's where you can go in and nominate somebody. You can also donate there. You can buy Sophia Graham t-shirts and stuff there. Also on our Instagram and Facebook page under Sophia Graham Foundation, we do a lot of stuff there. I travel around the country. If anybody is interested in me coming out and talking to their groups about, again, leadership, but leadership through the lens of growth. Yeah. I'm not a Tony Robbins, Zig Ziglar, let's make millions kind of thing. That's not what I'm about. I'm about growth. And again, growth could be so many different things to so many different people. The way that I actually set that up for companies to have me come out is, instead of paying me, I have them make a donation. It's tax deductible. And then I come out and do the talk for free. If anybody has any ideas or ever wants to talk about anything, like I said, I'm an open book and just love doing this.
And I'll make sure all of that information gets in the episode notes and the YouTube and my other podcast channels. So it'll be there for individuals who wish to contact you. So Kelly, with that, thank you so much for spending time with me this evening. I enjoyed our conversation, and maybe we could do it again in the future sometime.
Absolutely. I love to come along and talk about all kinds of good stuff. This was a great experience. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. And thank you again, Kelly. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.
Thank you.